And we're back. So we are on episode 77 of In Bed with Books. And today I'm going to be doing another review vlog with you. Not as many books as last time, but I think that's because I'm a slow reader and I never pretended to not be. So here are the last five books I've read since we last talked about what I've been reading. A couple of these are suggestions, and I will make a note that one of them was a gifted from the publishers. But kind of like last time, I'm gonna try to keep it under 5 minutes for each of the books, and then I'm gonna do a little bit at the end about the book that I'm currently reading, which I'm really enjoying. So without further ado, oh, and I know last time I kind of did them in like order of stars because there was just like months of books that I was talking about. But this time I'm just gonna go like in reading order. So since the last time we talked, I have read first one, On Silver Winds by Ava Smitty. This one I really enjoyed. So this I will note was an arc. I got it through, I want to say Book Sirens, which I do recommend, highly recommend if you want to do fantasy romance, advanced reading, or like review copies and everything. I really enjoy the books that I've been reading from there. So for this one, I give it a 3.5, which, looking at the star amounts that I've been handing out in this, I will say is probably kind of my average go-to. If you listened to the conversation that I've been kind of posting about with Kristen, I rarely go below a three. Like, three is kind of the lower end for me. And I think as I was going back and thinking about these books and looking at the reviews that I gave them, the numbers are really subjective. So just keep that in mind as I'm giving these stars. I'll still give my thoughts. But so this was a 3.5. And I love #TheStoryGraph for letting us put the 0.5 stars on there. A little synopsis of this book is that, like, in one word, the pettiest book I've possibly ever read. And I loved every single second of it. So, the premise of this is that Adeline, who is the second daughter of three, or the second of three daughters to the queen of like this ice kingdom, is not very keen on her royal duties. And because they've inadvertently made this little like matrilineal succession, because the queen never married. And in this kingdom, this is kind of one of the issues that I had. I guess I'll just say it now. So one of the issues that I had was that details weren't always given. And sometimes the details that were given were later inconsistent or contradicted. That was definitely more of an issue in the beginning, which is probably because of all of, like, the world building at the beginning. But basically, their mother never married. She refused to marry. That was like her big thing. She's called the Ice Queen because of it. And she has three daughters from three separate men. And they've already got established a kind of contest for competing about who's going to be the heir. So I guess we could assume that this also happens if there's male heirs, since it seemed to be pretty normal or like expected of them. But basically, the oldest daughter has been preparing to be the heir to the throne since day one. And the pettiness really comes in their relationship, because at the very beginning, it's introduced that like Adeline and her sisters all love each other very much and they don't have any conflict. And then there's these like little inklings that their mom would prefer if Adeline were competing for the throne and would rather not give it to her older sister. And the older sister, like, night and day just completely switches over. She starts like plotting behind Adeline's back. And she stops training with her entirely because now she's the competition and she doesn't want to give away her secrets. And so there's like that side of the pettiness, which I really enjoyed. And I know I'm saying petty a lot, but really it's this kind of like political tension that's going on, which I really liked in contrast. And I mean, it added to it, but I liked it in a romance novel. Because I haven't even gotten to that part yet, but it's very much a lot of the political conflict that's happening between Adeline and her sister is like exacerbated by the fact that almost immediately in the book, and I mean, this is in the, if you read the blurb or whatever, the kind of mythic, like fairy tale prince from their stories, he's like this mer prince named Kai, who fell in love with the princess, and their love, you know, was all of the magic that runs their world. He thaws out, and nobody actually believed, I guess, that he was real, or they had suspicions, or it was like some people did, some people didn't, because they've got a statue to the princess that he supposedly fell in love with. He thaws out, and he has a lot of hatred in his heart when he first thaws out. But he comes to the castle, and this is where we see this like chasm between Adeline and her sister form, because Adeline immediately is like, we need to help this guy. He's lost. He's clearly injured. He needs some help. He needs some warmth. And her sister uses it pretty quickly as like, she sees the unrest that his arrival causes, and she uses it to her advantage. Like, there's this a lot of prejudice against him and his people that are kind of coming out of the lake, and she's kind of going full like, go back to your own country. And it was, I mean, topical obviously, but it was also just fun to read about her, because through all of this, the mom is very clearly favoring Adeline. And that's kind of the other side of the petty, is that like the mom is stirring the pot a lot. And I love every time she's like dismisses the oldest sister, whose name I can't remember, the oldest sister in favor of Adeline, I feel like I gained months of life. It was so fun to read. It's so fun if you like drama. And then I just really enjoyed Kai and Adeline's dynamic. You've got the classic where they're like training together and they fall together. He is kind of, he's like quote unquote from like a different time. And so even though he's experienced, he's worried that he's overstepping his bounds with Adeline sometimes. And so he gets like super huffy and professional, or not professional, but like respectful of her. And it's really sweet to watch, because Adeline is even a little chuffed with it. So you have like the one side where Adeline is kind of obviously falling in love with this mythic prince, which I'm sure politically, because I think that's part of the issue, is we don't see a lot of the people. Obviously, because the main characters are all royals, we spend 90% of the book in the castle. But you have this prince return. And his whole story was that he loved their ancestor so much that their lands now powers the magic of their lands. And now he's falling in love with Adeline, and it seems an awful lot kind of like a, you know, like a story in the writing, and in the an easy way for the political side to argue for her to be the heir. Yeah, it's. There's a semi-major plot twist that I don't want to get into. I feel like I can't even touch information near it without giving something away, but I did not see the plot twist coming. I think that's a pretty consistent thing with most of the books that I've read recently. It was like, I did not see the twists. I could kind of see like where they were coming from, but I didn't see how they were going to land. And this one was, the last like 15 pages of the book were intense and stressful, and I'm honestly just like itching to read the next book. So having said that, I can't tell you exactly why I labeled it a 3.5, except that at the time I was reading it, I can only imagine that a lot of the like inconsistencies that I was noticing were really pulling me out of the book. So if you go to read that, I would keep this in mind. Again, I got an advanced copy, so I can't say for certain that those are even still in the book. The next book that I read was Five Broken Blades, and I do actually have this one. You can see all of my nice little markings in there. Almost everything that I've read other than this has been either an ebook or an audiobook, so I don't have like a nice little annotated copy to show you. But this one I do. This was a advanced reading copy that I was gifted, so just to stay above board, I guess. Okay, first of all, 5 stars. Five Broken Blades by Mae Corland, 5 stars across the board. I love this book. I've talked about it a lot on the podcast. I love explorations of power. I love explorations of class. And this was both. And if you listen to my interview that I had with Mae Corland a couple episodes back, she says very explicitly that that was her goal with writing this book. And I think she does such an excellent job of doing that. So the whole premise is that a group of 6 people, 5 of which are like trained killers in one way or another, are going and are tasked with killing the king. Sorry, I'm like, as I'm talking about it, it's the plot twist is huge. This is another one where I did not see the plot twist coming. You think you see it. So that's one of the fun parts about this book is that you go in knowing that there's a major plot twist, you go in knowing that there's a betrayal. And with all of the people in this little group, we get each of their point of views throughout the book. And Mae does a really, really excellent job of kind of like tugging you along with their secrets because they're not good people. They're really, really good characters, but they are not good people. It's so fun. And I mean fun in like the most heartbreaking way because we find out some really, for lack of a better word, some really fucked up stuff that these people have all done to survive because it's not, I think that's one of the reasons that Mae is so open about the fact that like it's a power and class exploration because they're not doing these things because they're bad people. They're bad people because the system that they're being forced to live in is so distorted. And she's very like topical, very obvious about that in each of the characters for in each of them like for the, like in their own way. But throughout, we'll get like to the end of a chapter. And we'll kind of get like the reveal on one part of a secret, and then you have to wait 4 more chapters, and then you kind of get like the other side, and you get like actually it's not that simple. And so each time you're introduced with the possibility of, oh, this person is actually not as great as you think they are, and then later down the line you're like, oh, actually, like I don't know that I could have made a better decision given the circumstances. And I think that's part of the reason that I enjoy reading, which is kind of like stretching your ideas of like humanity a little bit. Is that too big of a way to say that? I don't care. So things I think I mentioned in the interview, which is like the voices are super strong, the world building is super strong. Sora, I think I'm with many others in this one. Sora is my favorite character, and not just because she is, like strong and she's compassionate and she's very like hyper aware of her situation, but she's also ruthless. So we find out her motivation, and I would say with none of them did I not believe the motivation even, but with Sora, I connected to it in a different way. And this kind of like the sense that, how do I want to put this? Because when we talk about like these big tragic romances or like everyone really loves morally gray, love interest, we like those characters because we like somebody who would break the rules for us. Like I will talk about Fourth Wing, But in Fourth Wing, the reason Zayden is so much hotter than Dane is because Dane would not break a most basic rule to save his girl. Quote unquote, his girl. But Sora is like using what she has available to her to, like, I hate to say it because it, she's like destroying herself in order to save people that are close to her. And understandably, not healthy. But also, one of my favorite kinds of characters to read about is just somebody who will destroy themselves in order to, and I shouldn't say destroy, I don't mean like Cormac blowing himself up, but I mean like somebody who is willingly making the bad choices in order to save the people close to them, like Merlin in BBC's Merlin. His whole arc is that he continually has to make the bad choice so that Arthur can stay the king that was promised. And it's just so tragic, and I love it so much. So yeah, so Sora is my favorite character, and also she's hot. Like, who, she's, okay, I should, we're a little late into this, but spoilers. She's a poison maiden, and so you get these kind of gruesome scenes where she's using what she has, which is her body, which she's been raised to use, and then doing it in order to kill people that are bad. And it's fun. It's fun to watch them basically eat their words. Again, this is 5 stars. I can't really think of anything bad to say about it or worth like my time. I look at this book on my shelf and it makes my heart flutter every single time I do. I love this book. Okay, as promised, here is my thoughts on Fourth Wing, which I have been kind of open about avoiding. Again, if you've listened to the conversation I've had, or I had, and I've been releasing with Kristen, it worried me because of the hype. I have a very chronic problem with avoiding things because they're so hyped. I didn't watch Game of Thrones until like the fourth season, and I did it in secret. I waited until the fourth season was done, binged it over a summer, and then didn't tell anyone until season 5 was coming out. And I was like, yeah, I'm excited for that. And people were like, I thought you hadn't watched it. I was like, no, I've watched it. And it's because the pressure of what if it's not as good? And I've kind of done it with Bridgerton as well, because I'm just so concerned that I'm going to be too influenced by people's, like what people are saying about it. Also, on the note of Bridgerton, I did eventually watch Bridgerton and I'm like caught up. I'm on the new season. I am desperately waiting for what happens after the carriage scene. That's where we're at right now in recording this. So Fourth Wing, Rebecca Yarros, this was an audiobook that I did. I hate to say it, but I think the audio, like the narrator's voice, kind of influenced things somehow, or at least like at least a little bit. There's certain parts where I really didn't like the way she was voicing something. It made it seem too immature or too, I say childish, but I don't mean like fully childish, just like younger than I think is believable for me in this situation. But I also have plenty of good thoughts, so let me jump to those. I like, so if we're going kind of like character world building, I thought the world building was fine. It's, I mean, the world building, there isn't a lot of it. It's really just like a military romance with dragons. And the dragons are kind of the only, at least in this first book, please note, I have not read the second book yet. The dragons are really the only fantasy element at this point, and that makes it seem kind of like, okay, well, I wouldn't, like, it's a fantasy book in the like most basic sense of the word. So focusing more on characters, because I feel like that was more of a driving point in the book. I like Violet. I think She was not a Mary Sue, which I really enjoyed, which I had seen people kind of like making that accusation online, which is one of the reasons that I stayed away at first, because I can't deal with another Mary Sue. I can't deal with somebody else who just like doesn't struggle at all, walks into the ring and is just like perfect, kicks ass. You know, she was struggling up the stairs, but suddenly she can kick ass. No, like we really throughout, I mean, it's a massive book. Throughout the book, we see Violet progress and we see her get better at things. And I really like that. It took a while. And I don't know if this was audiobook versus me visually seeing something, but because I do find that when I like read words on a page, I engage with the book much differently than I do when I'm listening to it. The number of times that she talked about, like, well, my bones are just weird. I'm just weak. And I was like, I actually don't need to hear about that again. I'm okay. It was very, like, it was a long time before it was clear that she was talking, like, in terms of a disability. And it really didn't click, and this is fully on me. It really didn't click until Zayden got her the like saddle situation so she wouldn't keep falling off. And then I was like, oh, this is like accessibility stuff. She's got a disability. She's got an invisible disability. And I kind of wish that had been clearer from a different point, because it's like pretty far in the book when I was finally like, oh, she's not just like pick me girl talking about how weak she is. Because that was kind of the vibe that I was getting at first. And I at first it kind of made me like ill on her, but after a while I was just ignoring it. And then that happened. I was like, I get it now. And then that being said, again, I went in with this with like kind of fears of her being a Mary Sue. Again, very early on that was quelled, but I think there was like a consciousness almost of it when she gets paired with two dragons. And I do like that the defense of this is like one, she defended Andarna against the assholes. And two, the dragons who make the rules were pretty much just like, well, she said, the kids said, so we accept it now. And I kind of like that, because it showed how important their young are. And so like, is it a cop out? Yes, but also it does show their power structures there, and I really liked that that was just an easy way for them to do that. Let's see here. Oh, I like that the dynamic between her and Zayden. There's a couple of different parts to this. So one, I like that they start out as kind of like forced enemies. Like they're very clearly both attracted to each other to start with. And they're like dealing with this internally and then with each other throughout the book. But it's like family drama. It's not, it's like stuff, external forces that are being like thrust upon them. And I kind of like that a little bit more than I think when people genuinely don't like each other to start. Because it's often hard for me to move past that. But also, I kind of liked that when we're getting it all from Violet's point of view, she is very, she's like on the like offense, reverse plotting, like trying to figure out what his plan is so she can figure out what her next step is going to be. And he's just not concerned. And I, that's one of my favorite kind of like bits or tropes is when it's enemies to lovers, but it's like he's not there for it. He's very much just living his life, and she's in the back, paranoid, trying to figure out what the fuck is going on. Okay, so one of the big issues that I had with this, and maybe it's just me, maybe the changes, or maybe I'm like reading this wrong, I don't know. It's that there's this assumption within the writer's quadrant. Or school. I can't remember. That was another thing. It's like there's so many words being thrown at you. There needed to be some kind of structure explained. That aside, it's just expected that some students are going to kill other students. And it's painted as like a dangerous profession to get into, which it is because you're like riding airplanes without seatbelts, that are flying themselves and also spewing fire and giving you new powers and everything, and fighting other ones and fighting monsters and stuff. But because of all of that, because you've got the tests were like, well, you know, a lot of the students fail this test, and by fail they mean die, and that's because it's supposed to imitate being on the dragon, and it's like, you know, a lot of people fall off their dragons. Sometimes the dragons just don't want people to, like, there's the one girl who just gets fried when they're showing off for the dragons because she's annoying and because she just keeps complaining and being a bitch. And so you've got all this set up for, like, yeah, this is a dangerous profession because of the dragons. So then why are they allowing students to kill other students? Why are there not any kind of like footholds against this? Because you would think that they'd just let the dragons do all of that. Why would you allow fellow students to lower the number of people that are being sent to dragons? Especially because we know that the numbers are depleting, that they do not have the numbers within the army to like sustain what they need to do. And maybe there's like a whole plot thing that explains this, but currently, I'm not buying it. So this is another one. There is a huge plot twist, of course. And this is, I think what I'm finding is that a lot more are doing like plot twists within plot twists, because there's, for the four other people who haven't read this book yet, the reason that Violet and Xayden are technically enemies is because Xayden is the leader, the oldest of a group of kids whose parents were responsible for a rebellion several years before. And Violet's mother is the one who helped take them down. And everybody knows this. Everyone knows this conflict going into the year. And so you find that all of the rebellion kids are meeting up, and there's kind of like this, oh shit, like what are they doing in the shadows? And you think you figure it out. And then it actually turns out that there's this kind of like secondary issue. And it makes me excited for the next book. I haven't read it yet. And Onyx Storm, I think, is the next one, isn't coming out until I want to say next year. So I'm gonna probably put it off a little bit longer so I don't forget everything before then. But yeah, I enjoyed it. 3.5 stars. And the romance was fun. The smut part of it was fun. I hope that we still get Violet, and who knows, hopes for the next book that's already out that, again, majority of people have already read. Maybe I'll eat my words. I hope that Violet stays relatable, and I hope that, again, this is based on things that I've seen online. I hope the conflict between her and Xayden is not so much, knowing that there's like supposed to, I think I want to say like supposed to be 5 books in this series. Like, I don't need that much conflict. It is okay for people to stay together in a romance. You can focus on other parts of romance. That's just my opinion. The next book that I read is Morgan Is My Name by Sophie Keech. I was kind of looking for a like Morgan Le Fay Morgana retelling because I like it. As I mentioned earlier, obviously I watched Merlin from BBC, and I'm regularly watching the show, but I'm always looking for new ways to engage with like Arthurian legend in kind of subversive ways. Another 3.5 stars. So again, this tends to be what I default to when I don't feel like thinking too hard about it. So I do want to say, because I think the 3.5 kind of undersells, or I guess like oversells, my dissatisfaction with it. I really enjoyed this book. This is a kind of, like, I was gonna say Regency, not Regency, but that kind of like where you've got the ladies in waiting and you've got the like the sweetness, and more so than I was expecting from the book. So there's a lot. What do I wanna? It starts with Morgan and her sisters and her mother and her father Gorlois, like all happily in their castle. And I want to say it was Wales. And the second it started with Gorlois, I was like, this is not going to be a fun beginning. Because if anyone knows Arthurian legend, they know that pretty quickly Uther ruins that. And so I went in knowing pretty quickly that this was going to be a sad story. I did not fully prepare for how dejected I was going to feel at the end. I know some people read books for that, and I think if that's your thing, this is the book for you. I think if you want to read this feeling empowered, maybe wait and see if the other ones pick it up a little bit further. Morgan is like a spitfire. Her name, there's a lot of stuff about her name and talking about like she was brought by the sea because there's this huge storm the night that she was born, and how she's got this kind of like innate like wildness about her because she's connected to the ocean and she's connected to that instability. The issue for me isn't so much that that is quelled. I think she continually fights, and I love that she keeps getting back up. But it's the fact that in the entire book, we don't see that many wins for her. And on the one hand, like I totally get this is setting up for how do we get a villain like Morgan in a story like the Arthurian legends. On the other hand, and this is on me again. I think that's just my motto for this episode. I went into this looking for something far more empowering than I think I was given. And it was very frustrating. It was very frustrating to read every single time that like Uther won a fight. It was very frustrating to watch through her eyes as her mother kind of caved to these like patriarchal systems. Especially given the circumstances that lead her there. And it's frustrating for Morgan. And I think that's part of the issue that it was so much more is that like Morgan is very openly in her narration talking about how frustrating and how like disheartening it is sometimes to see those shifts. Or to see just like how easily her sister is given to these guys that they met 2 days ago and are now married and traveling off to those countries. And we see her, you know, fall in love and we see her heartbreak. The first time she finally fights, and again, just major spoiler warning for this if you're planning to read this. The first time she actually like puts her foot down and I would say like wins against these like assholes is when it has to do with her son. And that was frustrating for me because it wasn't that she did it for herself. It means that she had the ability to the whole time, and she chose, I don't want to say, oh God, I was about to come out. Like, I don't want to say chose not to, but she had the ability the entire time, and she just didn't push further. Like, if she'd pushed a little harder, if she'd chosen the right path, because she finally, like, I don't want to give the whole thing away. But in the moment that it happens, I guess I can. So I already warned you for the spoiling. So the whole issue ends up being that her husband, who she's been set up with by Uther, her husband was having an affair because they couldn't have kids. I'm gonna bet it was his fault because he even talked about how difficult it was for his parents to have kids. He, as a man in power, assumes that he can have any woman he wants. He starts having an affair with his like longtime friend, close advisor's wife, because she has like six sons, and he figures that it'll help. So his advisor leaves, and I mean, we don't really get a lot of this until it's like coming to a head. So we find out about the affair, and then, you know, several months pass, and we don't get any updates, and then we get the birth of their actual child. And we don't know what's happened to the mistress and to her child, even though we know she's pregnant and everything. And then All at once, we find out he told Morgan that she was gone, lied about it, has been actually hiding her at the castle that he gifted to Morgan, and that he's named both of the sons the same thing. So his actual like heir by marriage with Morgan and his bastard child with the, I guess, ex-wife, not ex-wife of his former best friend and advisor have the same name because he wanted to give his heir the same name and he just needed to be sure. And so like that's what pushes her over the edge. And that is valid. I would also go completely irate if I found that out. When I found it out in the book, I had to like set it down and walk around because I was livid for her. My only issue is that I wish she had made, because she has this like clarity wash over her and she figures out how to get out of the situation finally. I wish she had had that clarity hit her sooner. I wish we hadn't had to see her, like hadn't had to see her get knocked down so many times. That's what was really frustrating for me. I have hope for the next books because we know how powerful of like an adversary Morgan becomes in the Arthurian myths. But yeah, I think she was really like, she as a character was really empowering to read. Like, it's always heartening to read about women who get back up every single time. It was the whole situation. It was like the events happening around her that made me feel dejected at the end of this book. Yeah, I'm excited for the next ones. And I believe another one is on its way to be published soon. Don't quote me on that. The most recent book that I finished, I should say, is Book Lovers by Emily Henry. This one was a suggestion from Kristen. I love this book. I don't normally read just straight romance. And I think that has to do with the fact that I just really love fantasy. So I think for me, the pipeline has been more like fantasy romance into romance. So I will probably read more Emily Henry moving forward. This for me is a 4 stars. The grade scale is probably a little different from what I would do for a fantasy book, but I think that's because my expectations going into a romance book are slightly different. So part of it being so high is I watch a lot of romance. I watch a lot of Hallmark with my mom. That's kind of our thing. And I have no shame about that. I love watching Hallmark movies. And it's because the same reason that people read these books, I assume, which is like, you know what's going to happen going into it. There's something very secure about the formula that goes into a romance book. You just have to find the one with like the right characters that you like in the right setting with the right job, going to the right city. And this for me was a lot of that. So the whole premise of the book is that Nora, named after Nora Ephron, who gave us You've Got Mail, When Harry Met Sally, Sleepless in Seattle, Meg Ryan rom-com, Nora Ephron was involved. She is, well, named for this romance icon. Because her mom was super into romance growing up, and her younger sister is super into romance. And so it's kind of like, these three strong women together, it's important in their lives. She, however, the name has not helped her. She, although hyper-conscious of the structure and tropes involved with romance novels and Hallmark kind of movies and stuff, is also aware that she is not the protagonist in these. She is very much the city-bound ex-girlfriend who they have to break up with before the end of the story so that they can be with their one love. And that happens to her literally Like the third time it happens is in the beginning, like the prologue of the book. And so she's kind of accepted her identity as the like villain of everybody else's romance stories. And I kind of liked that self-awareness of her and also of the book. And then there's Charlie, who is presented at first as her unofficial professional rival. And this is another instance that I like where she's like built up this whole thing where they're enemies because they had one bad meeting and then they run into each other again. And it's obvious that he doesn't see that and that he hasn't thought about it that way. But she gets dumped again. And her sister convinces her, very, very pregnant sister, convinces her to go to a small town, the small town that her latest, she's a book agent, her latest, her author's latest book is set in. And it was actually the book that caused conflict between her and her professional rival, quote unquote. And so she gets there, and naturally, he's also there. And it's like, what are the odds? Very, very high because it's a romance novel. But also, it was a lot of fun to watch two people who are very aware of the romance tropes and who they would be in this situation kind of subvert that. Again, spoilers. I mean, not spoilers in that they get together because I don't know what you're expecting from a book titled Book Lovers, but they're going to get together. But she's really fighting with herself about the fact that, you know, she does focus on work a lot, but she's doing it because they lost their mom and because her sister, she wants to make sure that she can support her sister emotionally, mentally, financially, if need be. And he's kind of doing the same thing. And so they're not the entire villain that they think they are, or that they've let the world convince them they are. But they do fit the tropes. We're like, you know, they're wearing all black, or she's got the platinum blonde hair, and she w rides her Peloton while she reads the books. Like very Sandra Bullock in The Proposal kind of energy coming from her. But then at the very end, instead of them settling together in the small town, which spoiler is his hometown, they go back to the city. And there's a time jump before, you know, they say the L word. And I like that while we do get the kind of very traditional structure of setup, oh, they've run into each other again. Oh, there's a misunderstanding. Oh, they're having really like good chemistry, all of the normal romance stuff. We still get the quote unquote like the villain ending for her. Because I've always hated that. I don't get why they have to leave the city. The city's awesome. I like it's fun to go visit small towns. I would never in a million years just up and move my life to a small town because of a crisis. And that's just what all of her boyfriends seem to be doing, ex-boyfriends seem to be doing. And it seems like a terrible life choice. But again, this is a book from her point of view. And she's the villain, and so she gets to stay in the city, and good for her. So yeah, 4 stars, and I docked 1 star because multiple times throughout the book, she makes kind of like pop culture references in the narration, and so it's not like she's like quoting it to anybody, she's or like saying it to anybody verbally. It's purely internal, purely for the reader's benefit. And it feels like she's just like riffing with no one. It's just like kind of half references, half jokes. And I guess I shouldn't say half jokes. Like they are like related to what's being said. But I don't think it worked nearly as many times as it happened in the book. And that was really like the secondhand embarrassment sometimes from reading it and knowing that like Nora was thinking these things. I'm like, wow, that was really cringe. That was hard every single time it happened. Yeah, so I really like that one. I think that was a fun kind of like first step into just pure flat, I shouldn't say flat, just pure romance. And then the book that I'm currently reading, just a little minute or two on that, I'm currently reading What the River Knows by Isabella Banias. I almost started this last year, and I'm really sad that I didn't. But again, life gets in the way. Life happens. The reason that I was interested, I want to say I had seen like some kind of reel or TikTok or something, promotional stuff before it even came out, where it was comparing the romance in this book to Evie and O'Connell in The Mummy, and I was sold. I have not entirely gotten to, I'm very barely into the book. I'm really enjoying it. I'm very barely into it, so I can't say anything in terms of the money cor or the mummy correlations. But I like the setup so far. I like kind of the way that Ibáñez is introducing the magic. It's not very like info dumpy. I think some authors do a really good job of this. We're like surface, like flat interpretation. Yeah, it is technically info dumping, but she presents it as like, well, my dad always told me in this whole sequence, but we're learning about her relationship, like her strained relationship with her parents. And I like that. So I'm enjoying this so far. I wasn't expecting magic right from the get-go, but I like that. And I'm excited to get to Egypt finally with her. So yeah, those are the five books that I've read recently in the last couple of months. I should also mention those are not the only five books I've read. I've also been reading the like Avatar, The Last Airbender comics. And I've been zooming through those, but I mean, I think I give like 5 stars to all of those in my like Goodreads and or Storygraph reviews. There's not much for me to say about comic books. I zoom through those in like a day. Highly recommend if you're a fan of the show and you haven't read the comics yet. It's a really, really enjoyable extension of the universe. And I think really connects to the sequel series, Korra, really well. So yeah. So if you are looking for more on my reviews and everything, I haven't really written out my review for Book Lovers yet. I'm really bad about doing it right away when I finish a book, which is probably for the best because clearly my ideas or my thoughts about books shift as time passes. You can follow me on Goodreads or on Storygraph, just add me on there. Those will be linked in the description. But yeah, you can catch other thoughts that I'm having on the books I'm reading if you follow me on Instagram, which again, in the description. I hope you all have a lovely rest of your day and a pleasant summer.
Thank you for joining me for another episode of In Bed with Books, a bookish podcast for bookish babes. Make sure to like and subscribe so you can keep up with all of the latest updates. And if you have any suggestions for authors, books, or topics that you want to hear about on the podcast, then feel free to DM me on Instagram or shoot me an email. I'm wishing you a lovely rest of your day, and until next time, happy reading.